This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross. Tom Ford's feature film debut, A Single Man, came out this week on DVD. We've already heard from Ford himself. Now, let's listen back to Terry's 2009 interview with the star of the film, Colin Firth. Firth is best known for his roles in the films Bridget Jones's Diary, Love Actually, and Mamma Mia, and for his role as Mr. Darcy in the British TV adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. For his starring role in A Single Man, Colin Firth received an Oscar nomination. Our film critic, David Edelstein, called Firth's work in A Single Man the performance of the year. A Single Man is adapted from a novel by Christopher Isherwood, best known for writing the Berlin stories, the basis for the musical and film Cabaret. The movie, directed by fashion designer Tom Ford, is set in 1962. Firth plays George, a gay, middle-aged British man who teaches college in California. His longtime partner has been killed in a car crash. In this flashback from early in the film, George gets the bad news. He's alone at home. His partner is away visiting family. The phone rings.
Finally. You know it's been raining here all day. And I've been trapped in this house waiting for you to call.
I'm sorry, I must have the wrong number. I'm calling for a Mr. George Falconer.
I'm sorry, I was expecting someone else. Yes, sir, you have indeed called the correct number. How may I help?
This is Harold Ackerley. I'm Jim's cousin.
Oh, of course. Yes, good evening, Mr. Ackerley.
I'm afraid I'm calling with some bad news.
Oh?
There has been a car accident.
Accident?
There's been a lot of snow here lately, and the roads have been icy. On his way into town, Jim lost control of his car. It was instantaneous, apparently.
Huh.
It happened late yesterday, but his parents didn't want to call you.
I see.
In fact, they don't know that I'm calling you now, but I thought that you should know.
Thank you.
I know this must be quite a shock. It was for all of us.
Yes, indeed. Libya service?
The day after tomorrow.
Well, I suppose I should get off the phone and book a plane flight.
The service is just for family.
For family, of course. Well, thank you for calling. Mr. Ackley?
Yes?
May I ask what happened to the dogs?
Dogs? There was a dog with him, but he died. Was there another one?
Yes, there was a small female.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I haven't heard anyone mention another dog.
Well, thank you for calling, Mr. Ackley.
Goodbye, Mr. Falconer.
That's my guest, Colin Firth, in a scene from A Single Man. And Mr. Ackley, the person on the telephone, was played by John Hamm, so you might have recognized his voice. Colin Firth, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me just describe for our listeners who have not seen the movie what's going on during that phone call and after the phone call in terms of how you are reacting. You're in shock and you're in grief, and it's starting to register on your face. As you get the news, you're breathing deeper, you slightly grimace, your facial muscles tighten, your eyes start to tear, but you're still holding in your emotion. And you're alone in your home. You could let loose without anybody seeing. You could really erupt. You don't. Everything is still pretty held in. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided to play that scene?
I don't think it really came from a decision. I think it was something that seemed natural because of the way it was written, because of the speed with which I felt such news would be processed. You know, there's nothing in the script that says George, breaks down. what I read was what you heard, which was, "Oh, Mr. Ackley, what have, there was another dog in the car. I suppose I should book myself a ticket, and will there be a service?" He's operating as a man still socialized, still observing the rules of courtesy and protocol. Now, to me, looking back on it, I think there's something rather heartbreaking about that, because I think he's hanging on to the world as it was a few seconds ago, when everything was okay, when that's how you behaved and that's how you talked. Everything's actually falling apart completely inside. But I think if he gives in to hysterical misery, then it'll become real, and he's not ready for that. So I didn't really see it as containment. I saw it as just not having got there yet. And something comes to mind here. To me, it echoes some of the observations that Joan Didion wrote about in The Year of Magical Thinking. You know, her husband dies. She records the time of his death. She identifies and his body at the hospital. She signs a form. And she's ready to acknowledge the fact that she knows that he's dead. She knows full well that he's gone, but she's not ready to have it announced in the newspaper the next day, because then somehow, if everybody knows about it, it concretizes it in a way that she's not ready for. So I think that something as monumental as the death of somebody very close and very loved isn't something that you react to in a way that's quick or simple.
So much of your acting in A Single Man is about your face. I mean, you have dialogue in it, but there's a lot of silence in the film. There's times when people are talking to you and we're watching you react. So it's about your face and mostly about your eyes. And your eyes are so interesting in this movie because they're so penetrating. Your eyes look like they can see through other people, but at the same time, you have this kind of shield on your own face so that people can't see through you.
Well, I think that a lot of what the film deals with is the body armor that George puts on. I'm sure Tom talked about this. This was something that I think was very much in our minds when we made the film. He has to get through a particular day, and he has to put something in place, which is both protective mask. In other words, it's something that prevents the rest of the world from seeing how broken he is and how chaotic his true world is. And at the same time, this has to act as a protection against the world trying to come in on him, from the outside world penetrating his very, very vulnerable sensibility. And I think this is where he gets his need to dress perfectly from. This is why he needs to make sure his shoes are shined and that his cufflinks and his tie pin are in place and all of this. I think these are very much acts of desperation. These are things that his life depends on this day. And I think if the eyes are doing anything, it's because It's his day of seeing through that mask. Tom was there to photograph what I was doing, so it gave me a great deal of freedom, gave me a lot of freedom to be silent. As you heard in that phone call, I wouldn't have thought that scene would work on the radio, but it was interesting to listen to how heavy those silences hang. And I think Tom has great faith in stillness and in what the human face can do without a lot of histrionics and without being very, very demonstrative. And for someone whose approach to acting is not that demonstrative, this is a great gift. I felt he played to my strengths.
I just want to get back to the phone call for a second that mm-hmm. we opened with. So the actor who is on the phone with you in the scene that we just heard is John Hamm, who plays the leading role in the AMC series Mad Men. Mm-hmm. And he has such a distinctive voice, I kind of recognized it immediately. I think he wasn't quite as famous when he made that scene as he is now. Did you know who he was? Or was he just like a voice on the telephone, or did you just meet him? Was he in another room on the set, or was he like someplace altogether and you were never, you never met?
I never met him. I didn't speak to John. I spoke to Chris Weitz, who was one of our producers, who was in the next room on the other end of a phone line. So John came in to do that voice later.
You mean you didn't even shoot the scene with him, with that voice?
No.
Wow.
So that was done on different occasions. So you have him to credit for that, really, because he sounded as very much as if he was there.
Was Chris Weitz, the director, good enough to give you what you needed in that scene? It's such an emotional scene for you. You'd think you'd want the real thing and not a stand-in.
You know, Chris was pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't entirely different from what you hear. Mm-hmm. We were both haunted by the moment, so I think Chris was very sensitive, which is what he had to be. But there are a lot of things that didn't help. I mean, that was the day, just before I shot that scene, the sound man took his headphones off and played John McCain's concession speech to the room, because that was the day that we were shooting that. I don't know what your politics are, right, but hearing John McCain conceding defeat was not conducive to tragedy in that moment for me.
So you were elated, and then you had to be get tragic news and respond to that.
Exactly. I mean, if we think ourselves back to that moment, it was quite extraordinary, and it felt very special to be in America when that moment happened.
In A Single Man, you play a gay man, a man who seems to be comfortable being gay, but he knows he can't be out to a lot of people, for instance, where he teaches. But there are scenes in which we're seeing other men through the eyes of your character, George. And he's focusing on some of these men in a very erotic way. Mm. And so I'm wondering if in playing the role, since you're not gay, but you were playing a gay man, if you had to start looking at men in a different way and seeing them through the eyes of George.
It's an interesting question. I don't know. I think that, I don't find it to be something that's so very distant. I think you can be very comfortable in your sexuality and find people of both sexes attractive and appealing. So I don't think, in the scene where I'm having to look at the tennis players, and I wasn't looking at tennis players really, I was looking at some electricians probably.
This is a scene where everything seems to, someone's talking to you about the threat of nuclear war or something, and you're gazing at these two men playing tennis, and you're gazing them with some amount of awe and longing because they're so beautiful. As they play.
Well, that wasn't what I was looking at on the day, and I can tell you I did not find the electricians attractive at all. I actually think, now it's coming back to me, I think Tom had a couple of the guys playing tennis players sort of stand in. In tennis, they were there to shoot their scene, so he thought, well, we might as well have them standing there for an island. And then I remember thinking, now, is this helping? I'm looking at guys. The electricians didn't work, and I'm not sure the guy in the tennis gear works anyway. Now I'm beginning to get confused. So I don't know. It's an interesting question to ask about acting generally. I mean, if you're playing someone that is obsessed with collecting stamps or is power-crazed or, I don't know, is determined to, climb Mount Everest, I don't have to have those particular passions in me. In order to be able to play that part, I have to find passion from somewhere. And somehow I have to make that translate as that passion. So I think, whatever you're doing, it's never going to be entirely you. And the character's preoccupations and orientations are never going to have to be exactly what yours are.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Colin Firth, who's now starring in the film A Single Man. Now, you grew up in a bunch of places, Nigeria, the United States, several places in England. You were in India for a while, too?
I didn't go to India.
You didn't go to India, but your parents grew up in India.
My parents were born and raised in India. I still haven't been, which is increasingly peculiar if you know my family, because I really am the only member of the family that hasn't been. I'm nearly 50, and I still owe that trip.
And it was the fact that I think that your grandparents were missionaries that
yes.
led to your parents living in India and then Nigeria?
That's correct. My paternal grandfather started as a missionary. He joined the British Missionary Society because he heard that they were building schools and hospitals in India. He was not evangelical. He didn't go around converting people. In fact, he was very proud of the fact that he never converted a single person. His wife was also an ordained minister. He then took the decision to train as a doctor and came to the United States and took his family to a medical school in Iowa for 8 years, and then returned to India as a doctor specializing in osteopathy, and would go off for 6 months around into the mountains and cure as many people as he could.
And what about your parents?
My parents grew up there. My mother, I think, didn't come to England at all until she was about 16. Because of what her father was doing, she spent 8 years of school in the United States in Iowa, in a place called Ankeny. And my parents knew each other since they were very small, because they grew up together in South India. My father became a history lecturer, and my mother has taught and lectured in all sorts of things, comparative religion and the study of other faiths. She is a person who I think has a great belief in the contemplative lifestyle. She practices meditation. She, I think, is a real searcher.
Do you practice meditation?
No, not seriously. I've just sort of tried to learn to be quiet a little bit. I actually went to a monastery. This was a Buddhist monastery to learn something about meditation. And I have never practiced it with any great discipline, but I did find it to be, even in its probably shallowest and least disciplined form, I did find it to be somewhat helpful, because however fortunate my lifestyle is, it's not always the most restful.
What made you go in the first place to the Buddhist monastery? What did you want?
Restfulness. I suppose it was this sense that I've always been very attracted to the randomness and the unpredictability of my profession. I enjoy not knowing what's next. I enjoy the passionate commitment to something which is going to be gone soon. It's a strange creative promiscuity, if you like, where I'll move on to the next thing and commit myself with equal, you know, immersion and delight in something as if the one before just never existed. And I think that it's very exciting, but it can create a kind of upheaval because there's no continuity. And however thrilled I am by what I'm doing and however stimulated I am by it, I think it's it can be quite difficult to get back to a sort of a core. One of the things you're doing is taking on different people's lives. You're changing character. You're changing personalities. You're not always, I find it's not always easy to shake them off. And before you've shaken one off, you're taking another one on. And I think just for an actor, just to get back to a sense of who you are without all of that, I think can be quite a challenge.
I hate to end here, but we're out of time. Colin Firth, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Colin Firth, speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His movie, A Single Man, co-starring Julianne Moore, came out on DVD this week.